Sabura writes in Sivkatan Gimel, always Gimel, that Shabbat spoke of Mokom Shev Darko Lechasosa. Darko Lechasosa, she was narrowly covered. Says the Mishnah that refers to her hands, refers to her face. That Shabbat spoke of Mokom Shev Darko Lechasosa. Darko Lechasosa, she was narrowly covered. Says the Mishnah that refers to her hands, refers to her face. Excuse me. Now just come out. Her hands and her face and her, listen to this now, and her heels. Bottom of her foot. And this, according to Mishnah Berurah, extends until the shelf. What is the shelf? The ears over here in brackets. Ad hamakom shenikra kini kuf nun yun aleph v'loshen ashkenaz. I need that translate. But, here's the key word. But Avo, Zerol Seha, her arms, Vishoka, and her thigh, that's how they clearly wish to the same shoka, thigh. Afilu Regilin Lelech Megula, even if the women are accustomed to walk with them exposed. He has a nice phrase, or not such a nice phrase. Kiderech ha-pruzo, the way of the the women who are immodest, okay? Also, it's still prohibited to recite the Shema opposite those exposed parts. What he's saying is that Zroa and Shok, which I understand it to be translating as the arm and the thigh, are viewed as erva objectively. It's not subjective depending on time and place, but rather it is objective. In all times, in all places, it has the status of Erev. Wow. That is a very, very, very powerful statement. Seems to me that based on what we've been discussing until now, this should not at all be viewed as obvious. Quite the contrary. Seems to me that based on the previous analysis, there may be even a proof against the Mishnah Berurah. Anyone suggest what I have in mind? Yes.
Because it said it causes sin, but if men are used to seeing it every day, it's not
going to. That's correct. That is a correct point. We'll get to it, but that's not what I had in mind. Yes.
Well, maybe because what we're talking about with dating and whatever, that it changed. Now
that's what she said. That's a correct point, but it's not what I had in mind. Yes.
Do
That's exactly what the Mishnah Berurah said. It's objective. But yes? No. I mean, all these points are very good, but it's not what I want. What I want is as follows. You remember the question we asked before? Why is it that the Gemara finds it necessary to speak of Shoh when they already spoke of Tefa? We gave three answers. Remember the three answers? What are the three answers? One, it means less than Tefa than another woman. Two, less than Tefa, even with respect to his own wife, limited to the particular organ that's known as the Shoh. And three is just an example. Not telling you anything new. Well, what about four? What might four be? What could be four? Answer number four, better than all the three. Yeah?
Maybe everything else is a possibility to change, but Shoke is
better. That's right. That'll be the best answer of all. The Tefa is what we call subjective, depending on the time and the place. And Shoke is objective. If that sounds like to be the best answer. That's the greatest answer, the best, the most wonderful, the most clear, the most cogent. There's the question. Hakata, but he said it. If three begotten, we get three separate answers, but didn't give this one. So at least to my mind, this might be an indication that the reason they didn't give this answer is because he didn't think it was so. Didn't agree. I'm not sure if you follow what I'm driving at. If this idea of objective erva concerning Shoh is true, that would be the best answer to the original question. Why did Gemara say Shoh could already send Tefa? Here's the answer. Tefa is subjective and Shoh is objective. The fact that the Prima Donna didn't give this answer, he quoted three others. But not this, indicates that they just ain't so. That maybe Shoke is subjective just as Tefa is subjective. And then we need to resort to the three other answers. Now, but the Mishnah Berurah before making such a absolutely earth-shattering statement that there exists this objective category of known as Ra'an Shoh wouldn't have said it without some proof. You make statements like this at the top of your head. You need to go to God Al-Ador. You have to find proof. So sure enough, the Mishnah Berurah will be on those that have studied Mishnah Berurah on the bottom. Well, the Shah Atziyum, he tells you these sources for his rulings. So here he writes down, we'll look in the Elio Rabbah, who lived 200 years ago. The name of the Rokeach. Rokeach lived many hundred years ago from the Rishon. So I looked it up. The Rokeach says a total of six words. Tefach Tzar. Tefach on her skin. Ob Israel set on the gulos, or if her arms are exposed, also it's prohibited to recite the Kriyash. So the Eliyahu Rabbah assumed that the fact that Zerah is singled out must mean that it is objective error. I don't know. Seen that in the Gemara too, and yet that was not quoted as one of the three answers. Maybe just telling that the Zerah is ordinarily covered, or maybe it's even less than the Tefach in a place where it's usually covered, as we saw before when it comes to the Shoh. That's not so conclusive. Then he says, that's correct. Ayodam said so. Ayodam lived 200 years ago. That's correct. But still, people got to live before him. Yeah. He's more authoritative in certain sense. And then he comes out with a clincher. became Mukach Bitsubas Ayan Bez of Bez, our fifth Gemara today. Do Das Yehudis. Das Yehudis. This is the Dalet Sof Das Yehudis. We don't know how to spell Yehudis. That's also true. Depends on the Mishnah, just a little bit of background here. The Mishnah says that a man is permitted to divorce his wife, even encouraged, if she's in violation of certain basics. Das Moshe or Das Yehudis? Das Moshe, I think it's written in the Torah. Torah's Moshe. Das Yehudis, Rashi says, what is Das Yehudis? Rashi says in the Sefer Tzuvos. These are customs which the Jewish women accepted upon themselves. Clearly, the Mishnah Berurah is assuming that if this Das Yehudis is recorded in the Gemara, then it can't change. That's the assumption. However, again, in my opinion, one could argue this assumption. Das Yehudis is something which the Jewish women accepted upon themselves. So, they accepted this generation, they rejected the next. Not in the Torah. Maybe it can change. In point of fact, this is a dispute which goes back hundreds of years. Hundreds of years, let's say 300 and something years. And it's a shootout, in my opinion, between two of the greatest commentaries on a sefer called the Rosh. Rosh Rabbeinu Usher. Rabbeinu Usher was, who was Rabbeinu? It's important to get a little feel for the halakha. The Rosh Rabbeinu Usher was born in Germany. He was a student of the Gadol Hadar, who was the Maharam Mewittenberg. You may have read about him when you were a child. He was the one who was taken captive. Have you read The Unpaid Ransom? I think that's the name of the book about him. Unpaid Ransom. And the whole long story, he tried to run away, and then somebody discovered him, and they called it back, and they put him in jail, and he gets commanded not to ransom him, no matter what, because he died in jail. There was a command not even to ransom his body. They didn't ransom his body. The father did it anyway, and then it's a whole story. He had great students. He was the Gadol Hador. He lived in the 13th century. He had many students. One of them was Rabbeinu Usher, the Rosh. When the Maharam died in jail, the Rosh skipped town. That was a historic town skipping. You and I skipped town, you moved from New York to Chicago to California, it's a big deal, somebody moved. But the Rosh had to get out of Germany because he felt that after the Maharam died, they were going to capture him, take him as ransom. He ran to Spain. That was a historic event when the Rosh ran to Spain. Because until that time, there wasn't all that much what we call today cross-pollination between the schools of France and Germany, Tosfos, and the Spanish school. There was a little bit. The Ramban studied by some of the Tosfos, the Balei Tosfos. Not that much. We were in two different. They had what they called the Pyrenees. They always called those big mountains between Spain. Big mountains. It wasn't like you can hop a plane and go. You just didn't get across so easily. But the Rosh moved to Spain. So all of a sudden, the Gadol of Ashkenaz was now living amongst the Sephardim. That was like a tremendous person. He bridged the gap so much so that his son, the famous Tur, we read this week's parsha about Arbor Turim, the four Turim. That's the base of Lo Shavara. There's just a little background. Rabbeinu Yaakov, Bala Turim. You may know about the Bala Turim on Chumash, the little thing with Gematria, and that's just the cute stuff. But he wrote a parish on Chumash much before, and he also wrote his own halakhic work. which encompass all of halacha, which is practice. They divide it into four parts. The Ora Chaim, we have here, the way of life. Then the Ora Deah, those are the traditionally given over to rabbinic rulings. Then is the Eben Ezer, the roles of men and women, and marriage, divorce, etc. And Choshen Mishpat, about the monetary law. And he made an absolute union, combination of the Sephardic and Ashkenazic opinions, right? One after the other. It really didn't happen before that so much. Ashkenazim wrote their books, and the Sephardim wrote their books. They were never really combined. The Rush started to combine them, and the Torah finished up the job, his son. And that's the whole basis of the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch was divided into four parts. Same four parts. And this, every scholar is Siman by Siman. The same chapter, headings and numbers, in the Shulchan Aruch come from the Torah. Anyway, a little sidetrack. So the Rush wrote what's called the Hilchos HaRush in the back of the Gemara. Most Mesechus, it says the Rush, Rabbeinu Asher. He's number one. The first thing you'll see in the Gemara after the Gemara ends is the Rush. On the bottom, the Dole Yisroel wrote their comments. One of them is a famous man who you may know from if you ever studied Mishnah, as the Tosfos Yontif. Can you hear him?
Mm-hmm.
Tosfos Yontif, one of the great, great people. He lived in the 17th century. Yontif Lippmann Heller. He wrote the Tosfos Yontif on the Mishnayos. He also wrote the various books on the Rush. One that was called the Madani Yontif, one that was called the Divrei Chavudos, different things. So his interpretation on the Rush, on that passage, which the Rush quotes the Gemara, he makes the following remark. He says, yes, it's true that there's a problem of Shov, Zroah. He writes, quote, Kol Mokom Umokom Lefimin Hogo. Every place follows its custom, because the whole reason for this whole business is it's going to cause someone to think what he shouldn't be thinking. He's unused to seeing this exposed, but he's used to it, so then it does not constitute a problem. Take a look at this famous sefer called Kaf HaKayim. It's like the Mishnah Berurah for Sfarim. So right over here, in this Siman INA in Oz Beis, he said that's what the Divrei would have said. He's accepting the view which I suggested earlier, that perhaps with respect as far as Kriya Shema is concerned, even though it's Roa and it's Shok, as long as in that community it's being exposed on a regular basis, you would not say it constitutes error. It seems to follow from the three regards. It's one of the three answers. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, right eyeball to eyeball, right underneath him on the bottom of the same page, is a sefer called the Tiferes Shmuel. The Tiferes Shmuel also goes back hundreds of years. One of the Gedolim who's not so well, you know, we don't know any, his other Svarim are not really known to you. I won't mention it, but it was one of the Gedolim of that period of time, of a long time ago. I think also in the 17th century, maybe even earlier. In which he writes that even if there'll be a community in which they expose the Shok and the Zroa, it's still considered to be Tempah B'Isha Erev. That's the Mishnah Berurah's opinion. And the Prima Gadim, who did not quote this as one of the three answers, probably holds the other opinion. So it's you know, that they're Gedolim on both sides of the issue. Are these objective, do these objective Erevs exist or not? In my opinion, it's a major dispute. And frankly, looking at the original evidence, it seemed to me that the earlier evidence, I thought that the more popular view, the one which was accepted by the early Gedolim, was that there was no such thing. Now, question. The Mishnah Berurah, assuming that there is an objective error, draws the line at the knee. Kini, right? Now the major issue, which I know in Beis Yaakov, it used to be a big, fight until it was, like most questions of the day, decided the Chumrah. But 30 years ago, it was not so clear. What about the knee itself? The knee itself can come quite a few inches. I mean, I don't know, 2 inches, 3 inches, 4 inches, I don't know how many, I don't measure it exactly. So, is the knee itself, if it's exposed, considered to be an error here? Or no? Only above the knee. Today, everyone says they have to cover the dresses to go far, and even cover the knee itself. That's how everyone says. But I want to know, is that really true? Well, what do you think? The Mishnah Berurah says that you have to cover the entire shof, right? He says shof means the thigh, and I want to know, is the knee included in that or is it not included in that? Because the knee is in between. It's not part of the calf, it's not part of the thigh, it's just a joint in between. But would you say that as such is considered part of the shof or not? Anyone have a suggestion? I would like to give you something based on Torah Shabbat, not Torah Shabbat. Torah Shabbat. I still remember we learned from Bereshit still is also Brahma, right? So everyone knows the Chumash Klor. So, based on your encyclopedic knowledge of Chavisha from Shri Torah, what do you think? In my opinion, at least in the expressions of the Torah, the knee is not part of the shul. And my proof is a pasuk in the Tochacha, where Hashem warned us if we don't behave properly, He will afflict us with shchin ra, with bad boils. Where will the bad boils be found? Al ha-birkayim ve'al ha-shokayim. On the knees and on the, I'm assuming now the thighs. The fact that the Torah singles out the knees as being separate from the thigh indicates, at least to me, that the knee is not part of the thigh. But now, we have to come to the second bombshell of the night, which I think ultimately will contradict the first. Just be patient. The first bombshell with the Mishnah Berurah, the objective status of Erevah for Zeroah and Shoah. That comes the second bombshell, which some people gave away my secret already. I don't know how someone knows how you know this. And that is, if you look carefully at just about all the halakhic sources, from the Pesukim, till the Mishnayos, till the Rishonim, until the Shulchan Aruch, the almost inescapable conclusion is that the word shok means the calf, not the thigh. So slow. Tosfos says so. Based on the Mishnah in Olives, describes the anatomy of a person. Then the Shulchan Aruch describes Chalitza. You ever heard of Chalitza? Mm-hmm. You ever see Chalitza maybe? Or saw a picture of Chalitza? Yeah, you know anything about Chalitza? When the woman removes a shoe, which the man has in the situation of a brother-in-law, a sister-in-law, or children, the whole business. So where does the shoe go? You ever see have any idea where the shoe might go? No? Well, the shoe is a regular shoe. It's a sandal, really. But the shoe starts on the ankle, and you tie it all the way around till here. It occupies the entire calf. Stops before the knee. Shulchan Aruch says, Ibn Ezer, that the sandal, this chalitza shoe, is placed on the man's, you guessed it, shoulder. Mm. even in the pasuk itself. If you look in Shoftim, Perek Hazav pasuk text, in the context of one of the battles, I think it's Shimshon. I'm not exactly sure who's fighting over there. The 15th Perek of Shoftim. Anyone know? Shimshon. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm not sure. Expression used is Shok al Yoreh. Shok al Yoreh. In the spirit of describing the vanquishing of the foe. And the commentaries there say it means the Shok is the calf, and the Yoreh means the thumb. Unless you think this is some crazy rabbinic chumrah, the rabbis are trying to make things hard for the ladies again. Think again. There is a, what you might call a modern critical edition of Tanakh. What's it called?
Das
Mikra. Correct. Fantastic work, Das Mikra. The most Rav Kook put out by what you might call the modern scholars of Orthodox persuasion. They're not going to say, well, this is written. That's a junk that they don't have, but it's a modern work, you know. There, in that work, I looked it up, it says, Shok is the calf. And they're just trying to figure out the simple meaning of the words. Yes?
Why is he saying that the
Shok
goes until
the knee? Well, the Gurus of the opinion that the Shok is the thought. As I said to you before. But the evidence, and we've taken a long paper trail from the Pasuk, to the Mishnah, to the Rishonim, to the Shulchan Aruch, all seem to indicate that Shok means the calf. What can I do? It was a great man who was bothered by it. His name was the Chazon Ish. He writes all these proofs, and most of them. Now what am I going to do? How can I say such a thing? Although the evidence is all pointing in this direction, but it's impossible. Because we know that the fine women, who no one can pass the shalom and criticize for their behavior, that they don't cover all the way down to the ankle. How can it be? What's going on over here? So of course, in certain Hasidic circles, they make sure they cover till the ankle. Either with a long dress or skirt, or with what? What kind of stockings? Opaque stockings, like seam, giveaway seam, or maybe made from blue or black or whatever other color. And there are Rabbanim and B'nai Brak who recommend very strongly that it be done that way, because after all, that's what it says in the Gemara. That's a simple pshat. The name of Binyamin Zilber, Binyamin HaTzadik, he said he argued with the Chazon Ish, because the Chazon Ish at the end backs out, and he said, how can I say what I'm saying? It's against what all the observant women did all these years. I can't castigate them. He said, he argues the Chazon Ish. What do you mean you can't castigate it? But all the evidence is so clear, overwhelming, and incontrovertible that Shok means the calf. So some say, well, women wear stockings. Yeah, but come on, those are see-through stockings. Would you allow her to wear only the stockings? That's it? Nobody would allow that. Not even here would that be allowed. So, I mean, if the stockings are considered a good covering, so why not? It's not a good covering. So what's going on? So it's a good enough covering for the calf, but not for the... So what's happening here? What's happening? Exactly. So, in my humble opinion, the best way out of this mess, and I'm just only giving you my way, I'm not telling you that I'm right, but in my opinion, the answer to this is exactly what we spoke about earlier. Namely, as we suggested, based upon between the Gadim and the Kirvei Chamudos, but going beyond what they said. They were discussing Kriya Shema. What is considered permissible and prohibited with respect to Kriya Shema? I'm going further than Kriya Shema. I want to discuss the issue as to what a woman is permitted to keep exposed. Let's not forget, what is tzniyus really? After all this speaking for over an hour, what is tzniyus? A woman should not expose that which a man shouldn't see. Bottom line. Now what should a man not see? Something which is not used to seeing. So therefore, one may argue, at least up to a point, I agree, there's some point beyond which you can't go, but up to a point, that if something is ordinarily left exposed in a particular time and place, even though it's called zroa or shok, and even though in the time of the Gemara there's no doubt that there was an absolute prohibition against exposing it, was a violation of Das Yehudis, grounds for divorce. Nevertheless, if in a later time and place it becomes commonplace that it's exposed, then there's nothing wrong with exposing it, A. Just as B, the Gedolim we mentioned earlier, the Rechamudas, possibly the Gedolim, by implication, say, there's nothing wrong with reading Kriya Shema when it's in full view. That's my own bombshell. That's bombshell number three, which knocks out one and two in one shot. Yes?
Right,
that's what I said before. No one leaves till the end of the year. I'm not letting anybody leave. You won't have the wrong impression. Yes?
I'm just wondering, what is it about the Chazon Ish and the Shogun?
What is it translating and explaining? Well, if you look at the Chazon Ish, which is a very complex analysis, the question is, what does shok mean in a human, and what does shok mean in an animal? Right, but the word shok may not, yep, that's getting complex, we don't get involved in that. May differ, this is just etymology, what the word means, an animal and a human. Put these on the side for now, it's already getting too complex. Now, it seems to me, that this bombshell is not really my own bombshell. Yes?
It's okay,
it's very sensitive. You can ask anything you want.
So this includes that trying to change and etc. includes
the Zroa as well as the Shok. I mentioned to you before what Rashi said. Mm-hmm. Rashi said that Zroa is Das Yehudis. Das Yehudis means that which the women accept upon themselves. And therefore, one might argue that indeed, these things can in fact change. Yes. He said it can. He said it can change. He said
that.
He's right. These are somehow. You're right. Mr. Brewer put them in the same breath. Now, may I quote for you Igros Moshe. Igros Moshe was written by the great Rav Moshe Feinstein. If you want to look it up, probably you can find it somewhere, build it somewhere. It's Eben or Ezer, Gaelic Al, Simon Samach Test. I will quote it. You listen carefully and I'll give you somewhat of a translation and a summation. Ach yesh isur acher v'noshim b'din das Yehudis shelo lisnag v'pritzes v'ksu v'tafayim v'eis. Right? This das Yehudis, she can't be v'pritzes as evidence v'ksu v'tafayim v'eis. Avol mitzad ve'h urak v'shehi atzma osakim. This is violated only if she alone in the community conducts herself in that fashion, exposing the arms of the human nature. Avok shederech kol anoshim be'irokei. But all the women in the city do that way. Ein shayach lahachshiv zeh the priests. It's impossible to consider that to be priests. What does priests mean? Someone who... What's the expression of priests in Tanakh? Poray together. Kohelas, right? You go through the fence. This is the fence that you went through. The fence is not there. You can't be considered going through it. Now, of course, Rav Moshe is painfully aware of the fact, running in America, it could be that the custom in that place is all based on priests. Hollywood, the modern world, all business. So he takes care of that and says, Be'ein chiluk mashanasa derech hanoshim shebi'ir hoyamishim priests. It doesn't matter if this bad custom in effect started out because of immodesty. The Al-Kalpana, nevertheless, came and shekenu derech levishos nevi'ilukha. Since that's unfortunately the way they're walking around and they're dressing. Ein lahachshiv zeh lemaisa pritzus. You cannot view it as immodesty. V'les or alayna to forbid it absolutely. Elavot mi derech chasidus litzniris yisera. It is certainly praiseworthy for extra modesty to cover this part anyway. V'tavol alav bracha. She should be blessed if she accepts it upon herself. This, to me, is straight talk saying that it depends upon the custom. And in a different shuvah, that same vibe, end of Siman Nun Zayin, in some of the different concepts we'll get to, I guess, next week, he says, quote, Ulai das Yehudis urak midine mina. Maybe das Yehudis is the only custom, based upon the custom of the women. So we cannot prohibit it in a place we don't find it. They accept it as custom. So what I'm trying to drive at here is basically I'm trying to hide my emotion here. But you, when you make such a wild statement, you try to find the one to hide behind. You can't blame me, can you? I mean, I got to do this, right? I got to protect myself. So I think Rav Moshe is saying this. Of course, your question is a very good one. So where do you draw the line? So let me make a preliminary statement. And that is, one need not go up to the line, but there is a line. Rav Moshe speaks about Hasidus and Tznius Yisera, especially in a generation that's so porous as such as ours, we try very hard to be more strict and more scrupulous in these matters. Number two, who do we measure by? By the non-Jewish community? I doubt that. Oh, I think so. The Jewish community in general, and unfortunately there's not much difference. Probably have to measure by what we call the Orthodox community, the Shomer Shabbos. I'm not talking about frum. Shabbos. Okay. Shabbos and Kashrus. The Shabbos and Kashrus community. Those who keep Shabbos and Kashrus. So we have to measure by them probably. I don't think you measure by the Goyim or the people who only keep Shabbos. Yes. Not all cities have various communities. There's some cities have only elite cities, enclaves, neighborhoods have only one uniform kind of Jew living in them, like Be'er Sha'ar. I mean, 90-something% of the Jews in Be'er Sha'ar have a certain custom. They had to be led Bas Yisrael. Do they still have those signs?
Mm-hmm.
Bas Yisrael. Don't you dare walk in his streets unless you follow our customs. In a sense, they're right, that they have certain customs that they're trying to maintain. Even if they go beyond what the Mishnah Berurah said, and they do go beyond, but I'm mistaken, those, what did Bas Yisrael say? Till here, right? Till the wrist, till the ankle, and then what did Bas Yisrael say? And they were defined for it. I'm not a Bas Yisrael, so I'm not a Bas Yisrael, turn it out, the other way. But, and did you ever read the fine print? What did it say there? Never read it. Wrist and the ankle. That's their minig in Me'er Sha'arim. And you know what? They're probably right based on the Gemara, according to our understanding. That's probably what Jeroen Shokas consists of. The forearm and the calf, in all likelihood. Can't blame them. New York City. Whoa. New York City, that's a completely different kind of city. New York City, well, it also has Kippen and Williamsburg, and those square mile, the magic mile in Williamsburg. That is just as close as Me'er Sha'arim. Even Borough Park today is pretty close. Pretty much so. And not to speak of Muncie or Monroe or New Square. And there are places which have specific customs. If you go to those places, you follow their customs. Yeah, what about Manhattan? Manhattan. Any other expression is fine in the describe and happen. What would you say, the anything goes, Burrow?
Right?
So it's hard to say what the custom, the roomies in Manhattan, how they dress. The problem, and they dress the same as a non-Frivol, or even as a non-Jewish. Then I guess one could argue that if a person is in that kind of a community, going through emotions, but I read Rav Moshe, there would be very few absolute restrictions. But I have to add that I'm not encouraging this kind of practice. So if the community is that loose, if you will, I recommend to leave the community. Instead of lowering yourself to that standard, which may be within your, strictly speak, within your halakhic right to do if you're in that community, according to Rav Moshe, you should get out of the community. Or at least adhere to a strict standard. I want to add one more very important point from Benjamin Zilber. Very important, yes.
What about just
meaning
as two different kind of standards?
Right. The difference is the mixed community. There's some Haredim, there's some not Haredim, not even all different people. So presumably, as long as you have a significant community on your side, you can maintain your standards. There's no right to demand that you keep to a different one. Yes?
Even more specifically, even within a certain type, let's say you say you're going to leave it. Let's say the community is with the camp. So some women will wear stockings, some women don't wear anything, some women wear socks and shoes. You know what I mean? Like, it depends. Specific.
Right, exactly. It depends upon the custom. For example, stockings. You mentioned an example. Is there a requirement to wear stockings? I haven't found it. If assuming that the just for argument's sake, that the beneath the knee, as the Mishnah Berurah said, is considered subjective, dependent on the place. And in that particular place, they don't cover. Most places don't cover beneath but below the knee. Why have to wear stockings for? Not going to see through anyway. The answer is that if you live in a community where they all wear stockings, you have to wear stockings. Because that's the definition of their sneers. And even though, strictly speaking, not doing covering or uncovering, it all depends on what's customary. And for you to go without stockings in the community where they do wear stockings would be a violation of priesthood. Even though you're not uncovering any, not even one square inch more than anybody else. That's where the whole slit story comes from. Slits. According to some of the slits is your arm by Yahweh, slits, terrible thing. What do they want from the slit? Even if the top of the slit can be beneath the knee. And they're screaming, slits, but if you're covering more than any other, they consider slits to be somehow a violation of their customs, and then there's room to justify that position. I'm not saying it should be followed, but there's room for it. And let me get to my... Yes, I don't want to forget this before I leave you go. Yeah, what?
I just want to know, is the same thing applies in more strict community as in a more loose community?
Okay.
So if you're in a community, let's say that women wear, not even short, let's say women wear pants, and not even
right.
Short skirts, right? So then it would be, okay, of course it's a midah if you do it, if we did not, but it would be okay for a person to walk around.
All women wear pants. Then, according to our advice, as I understand it, it would not be considered to be a violation of Dasi Hudis because everyone's going that way. I may say to move out of that neighborhood. Not such a great level of status. But I wonder how much, if I read it, would not be an absolute violation. Yes?
So should this follow only if your dress code has to go according to the people in whose town you live, or this applies every time you go away to visit the neighborhood?
I would say even if you're visiting in Rome, it was a Roman zoo. Man Sharma was the man Sharimian zoo. But only strict. I wouldn't say if you come from, I wouldn't say Las Vegas do it, so Las Vegas do it. I don't know. If Miami do it, the Miami do it. I don't know. I wouldn't say. Let me get to my point before I let you go. I don't want to leave without this one. The same Rabbi Yovan Zilba Tzadik bemoans an unfortunate phenomena, which he witnessed in B'nai Brak, the holy of the holies. You know, in his opinion, if a woman is wearing a tight blouse, whatever she's wearing which is tight, it's as if she's wearing nothing at all. That's what he meant. Now that's, of course, a little hyperbole. But he's trying to bring out the point that there can be women who can officially, you know, cover everything, and you and I both know there's absolute truth. Absolutely. You can't measure tzniut and kriyas shma with a ruler. That's a very, very important principle. And there's so many ramifications, I can't even think of all of them. You know better than me. You know how a person walks and talks, and it's all sorts of treatments. Really. I don't care what the person is wearing. And it could be tzniut, even though you're not so quote, from in terms of what it's also called tzniut. I have to bring this class to an end. We're not really finished with this subject. I thought it was going to be a hot one. This is really a big one. We haven't even started talking about the obligation to cover your hair, which is directly related to this. We'll talk about that next week. And this kolisha, which is also related to this. So this is the next week. We'll have...